Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Episode 246 for the Love of the Game on the Bleed Podcast Network is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including NBA hoops, college hoops throughout the year. I mean, this is a hot time to be betting basketball. NBA season down the stretch, they come in the regular season. And in the next couple of days, we have March Madness. Conference tournament week is this week. Then we have Selection Sunday on Sunday. Then the NCAA tournament. All that good stuff. And Bet Online is your number one spot for all of it. Experience the world's best wagering platform anywhere from your desktop to mobile phone devices. And obviously, not just basketball. It's got tennis. It's got hockey, boxing, you name it. Bet Online has it. Head to Bet Online today. Become part of the team. And remember to use promo code BLEAV for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Again, that's promo code BLEAV. BLEAV to get a 50% welcome bonus to your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. With that said, episode 246 for the Love of the Game. Let's get this.
Dedicated to all my hustlers, that's a product of their environment. Whether getting money legally or illegally, we gotta do what we gotta do to survive, man. Grew up a screw up, baby. Got introduced to the game. Yeah, ever since I was an embryo, waiting to shape up and ship out, something in my brain said wake up and kick out. Roberta and Wayne stayed up and flipped out, cause when I came I was draped up and dripped out. Snipped the umbilical, spit the government chip out. Peace up, A-Town down.
And we are back, episode 246 for the Love of the Game on the Bleed Podcast Network with yours truly. It's ATH Aaron Tobin Hess. Back in the saddle, back behind the mic on a Tuesday evening, a late Tuesday evening. The Knicks just welcomed back OG Anunoby to the lineup, beat the Philadelphia 76ers by 30 points. We'll get to that in a little bit. This is on the heels of the Knicks having an absolutely disgusting performance on Sunday where they only scored 73 points, but the Knicks have held three straight games, the opponent to under 80 points, pretty impressive. We'll get to them in a second. So last week was a really dead week in the sports calendar, and it's heating up this week. We had NFL free agency, a lot going on with my New York Giants, and that's going to be the subject of today's podcast. Spoke to a recurring guest about what the Giants have done. We'll give you a recap in just a second. But not just that, that was happening. Conference tournaments are happening. Selection Sunday is on Sunday. That's super exciting. NBA and NHL, the Rangers had a monster win against Carolina, 1-0 shutout by Shesterkin. Adam Fox with the only goal. He was sensational all night. But let's start with free agency, specifically with the New York Giants. So out goes Xavier McKinney. Out goes Saquon Barkley to Philadelphia. The Giants bring in the guard, John Runyon. That's the son of the old Philadelphia Eagles guard, John Runyon, from the Packers. Good signing. They bring in Brian Burns, the star pass rusher for the Carolina Panthers. They trade a second and a fifth. They give him a $150 million contract over 5 years. Those picks were what they acquired in a Leonard Williams deal. He's an elite pass rusher, and pass rushers are a rare commodity. So for the Giants to get a guy that good at 26 years old is pretty incredible. Obviously, the headliner is Saquon Barkley. and Saquon Barkley going to the Eagles on a 3-year deal, about just over $24 million guaranteed. I thought he was going to come back to the Giants on a 2-year deal with a front-loaded first year in terms of guaranteed money, but no, he got more from the Eagles. He beat the franchise tag, and it was very clear that Joe Shane, who didn't draft Saquon Barkley 2 overall, they liked him, but they didn't love him that much. And I'm a little torn on this because on the one hand, I don't blame Barkley for getting the amount of money that he's getting and trying to go to a team that has aspirations to win. The Giants don't have aspirations to win right now. It's very clear that they're in a transition. I know you can look at the Houston Texans, as my recurring guest brought up today in our segment. Don't want to tease too much of it. You can look at the Houston Texans going worst to first. Happens all the time in the NFL. I just don't think the Giants right now are that team. So a part of me understands and doesn't fault Barkley. A part of me is not angry at Joe Shane for kind of trying to reset the deck for all the ills that Dave Gettleman caused this team. Now, again, I was actually pro taking Saquon Barkley 2 overall, knowing that they weren't going to trade down. I didn't want to take Sam Darnold. They weren't drafting Josh Allen. And even if they did, he wouldn't have succeeded in New York the way he is in Buffalo. So I was fine with Saquon Barkley because when that guy was healthy, he was the best running back in the league. Him and Christian McCaffrey. Right now, McCaffrey's been a little bit of a better health bet than Barkley, but Barkley was right up there. So when you say a running back can't lead you to the promised land, well, look what Christian McCaffrey did for the 49ers. And yes, the 49ers had a stacked team around him. And yes, Brock Purdy is a lot better than Daniel Jones. But if you manage your salary cap correctly, you can win and win big with a running back making a decent contract. The 49ers are Exhibit A. Where the Giants went wrong with Saquon Barkley is that they decided to give Daniel Jones $40 million. And yes, the contract is structured so that the Giants can get out of the deal, and they probably will get out of the deal after next year. But for this season, Daniel Jones making that money cost the Giants Xavier McKinney and Saquon Barkley. That's the way it is. That's just the reality of the situation. The salary cap is a very hard cap. The pie and the size of the pie is very defined. And when you pay mediocre to below average quarterbacks, big money, this is what happens. Yes, the Saquon Barkley era did not go as planned with the New York Giants. I don't necessarily fault either side right now. But where I do fault Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, because I'm sure he had a hand in it, is really believing that Daniel Jones, after one good year, and yes, they won a playoff game for the first time in a long time, and that shouldn't be discredited, for them to believe in Daniel Jones enough to give him $40 million a year when he's never thrown close to 4,000 yards or close to 30 touchdown passes, that to me is a problem. They can right the wrong after this coming season. But it cost the Giants a fan favorite and a guy who was their best player the last couple of years. And yes, I know he was a running back, but still, you can win with a running back who's making a decent contract at a high level. Look at the San Francisco 49ers if you do everything correctly. But those are the breaks. And the Daniel Jones contract is one example that I think the salary cap and the way it's allocated in the NFL is incredibly flawed. I mean, look at Kirk Cousins, another prime example. Kirk Cousins has one playoff win, and that guy has racked up over $230 million in career earnings. Yeah, I know he was the best quarterback on the market right now, but like, Kirk Cousins making that money. And I do think it was a good signing for Atlanta, given all the other pieces they have in place. But, like, I'm just not wanting to pay a quarterback unless he's, like, Mahomes, Allen, and Burrow. That percentage of the salary cap. I just would rather not do it. You can draft guys, and if you have to go back in the draft every single year until you get it right, fine. You can find guys like Gardner Minshew, you know, to come in and be spot starters and not be terrible. I think quarterback and their value in the league has gotten crazy inflated. And I know this is a major debate I have with today's guest. But I stand by it. I mean, look at the quarterback contracts going forward. Like, Jalen Hurts is getting paid over $250 million. Long-term money. That right now is going to be the worst contract in the NFL. Look at the Dak Prescott money. The Justin Herbert contract is going to hamstring the Chargers. Like, at a certain point, it is on the owners and the general managers to realize that they need to bring the quarterback contracts, they need to bring the percentages down. Because very few guys are like the guys I just mentioned. Mahomes, who's on a tier to himself, and Allen and Burrow are on the next tier. There's only three of those guys. Everybody else shouldn't be making close to what those guys are making. And yeah, it's frustrating as a Giants fan to see Saquon walk. But again, I don't blame him. I don't necessarily blame the organization. It's just the whole thing was kind of rough. We're going to get into this more later on in the show. In terms of some Yankee news that came out, spring training is in full force. The regular season is right around the corner. And the Yankees are already getting some crappy news. First, Aaron Judge gets hurt, that he has like mid-March fatigue. Like, what the hell is that? With an abdominal injury, that's bad. But the bad, bad news is Gerrit Cole is having an MRI in his pitching elbow. This is potentially a disaster. If Gerrit Cole misses significant time for the New York Yankees, you can kiss their season goodbye. And this is a really important season for the New York Yankees. They had just traded for Juan Soto, who's a pending free agent. They're going to want to keep him. But if they're not going to win, then he may not want to stay. And then at that point, it's like, are you trading him midseason? Yes, I understand that's a doomsday scenario. But if Gerrit Cole, who's been ultra durable and the best pitcher in baseball for the last couple of years, or at least one of them, can't go, Yankees have a major hole. Will the Yankees look to Blake Snell? That would be a nice fill-in. You're going to have to sign him. He remains unsigned. He's won a couple of Cy Youngs. He doesn't eat the innings that Gerrit Cole does, but still, it would be a major help. Are they going to look to trade for White Sox starter Dylan Cease? Maybe. We'll see. But the Yankees better pray that Gerrit Cole is not seriously injured and that that elbow is not going to keep him out a significant amount of time, because they cannot go a long stretch without him and expect to win anything. This is a very important season for the New York Yankees. So I mentioned the New York Knicks. Welcome back, OG Anunoby. And he makes all the difference. He makes all the difference in the world. A great Twitter follow, Benji Ritholtz. Shout out to him. Fellow Yeshiva University graduate. Does great stuff on the Knicks over Twitter. And on his podcast, Knicks Film School. He's fantastic. Basically gave out grades for tonight's game. Brunson got an A. DiVincenzo got a B. Josh Hart, triple-double was sensational. I love Josh Hart so much. OG Anunoby got an A. And he basically said at the end of it that when your table's a mess, it's got nicks on, it's got stains, and you put over a tablecloth when you're inviting company over, specifically your family, and I'm paraphrasing, that OG Anunoby is the tablecloth. And he nailed it on the head. The Knicks are just such a different team with OG Anunoby. He makes all the difference. Would it be nice to have Randall back too? Yes. But we've seen Randall not play within himself and him be detrimental to the team. OG Anunoby does none of that. OG Anunoby just fixes everything. And the Knicks, who are struggling to score, bring that guy back into the lineup, and then all of a sudden, they're getting easier looks, less stress on DiVincenzo, less stress on Brunson, less stress on Josh Hart. And he just makes all the difference. If they just have him, if they just have him with the other four guys, their core guys, Hartenstein, Brunson, DiVincenzo, and Hart, if those guys are healthy, with Deuce McBride coming off the bench shooting 40% from three, he's been a great energy guy. I love his minutes. Can get a little bit out of Jericho Sims, maybe a little bit out of Bojan Bogdanović. The Knicks are going to be formidable. But that brings me to my other point about the New York Knicks. I was called crazy when their trade deadline day trade, bring in Bogdanović, Burks for a couple of second round picks and Quentin Grimes. I was told that the Knicks hit a home run. I was told that they hit a home run. By the way, Precious Achiuwa has been great for the Knicks and is way better as a backup five than a starting power forward. But anyway, back to the trade deadline day trade. I was told it was a home run. And I pushed back. I said, it's not a home run. I think they could have done better with the Evan Fournier contract. You got to shoot higher than Bojan Bogdanović and Alec Burks. I thought they sold low on Quentin Grimes. I still think he is talent, young player. And I was told that the Knicks hit a home run. Well, it turns out I was right because Bogdanović sucks and Alec Burks sucks even more and they're not playing them. But the beauty of having OG Anunoby in the lineup, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter. It makes all the difference. And the Knicks go from a middling team to a formidable team with just him in the lineup. A couple of quick NBA thoughts before we bring on our recurring guest I was referring to before. Quick thing on the Dallas Mavericks. The Dallas Mavericks are, you know, had a hot stretch. Then they lost like three in a row. Now they've won two straight games. But I don't think the Dallas Mavericks are winning anything the way they play, the way the team is structured. And I know Luka Doncic is great. I know he puts up monster numbers. But the way he plays, with him dominating the ball the way he does, and him routinely taking close to 10 more shots a game than the next guy, Kyrie Irving, who, as much as I can't stand the guy, has been pretty good for Dallas. Like, this is not a way to play winning basketball. And it's not just the heliocentricity of the offense. There was a clip against the Detroit Pistons that came out where it was a 3-on-1. I think it was after a turnover. And the Pistons missed a couple of layups, but Doncic was the only one guy, and he couldn't give a shit to try and grab the rebound or try and make a stop on defense. His ambivalence to defense is honestly embarrassing. It's embarrassing. And I know he's brilliant offensively. He's a one-man band. Can win a game any given night by himself. But the way he plays basketball is not winning basketball. It's very hard-nest, even though he's better at it than Harden ever was. It's very hard-nest, and that is an insult. It's an insult. For all the love Luka gets, I just don't understand how nobody else pushes back on the fact that he doesn't have winning habits yet, because he doesn't. The other big thing is that the Karl Anthony Towns injury that I thought maybe wouldn't sink the T-Wolves, that Naz Reid could step in and you know, replace some of the production offensively. But they're just a little shallow in the rotation. And as goofy as Karl Anthony Towns is, he's been really good for them offensively. And it's just more stress on the backup guys. So I'm nervous about the Timberwolves, a team that I liked, a team that Anthony Edwards is going to have to carry. He's going to have to take another step up. Is he ready for it? I'm not 100% sure yet, but again, he's only 22. He shouldn't be asked to do this, but it's a shame. We'll see what happens, how long he's out, but I'm not really sure the T-Wolves can be in the mix for that number one seed without Carl Anthony Towns. And last but not least, this is something that really annoyed me. So I've been on record saying the discourse around discussing the NBA and pro basketball is garbage. I think 90% of people who talk about the NBA on Twitter are a bunch of idiots, like real idiots. And nothing summed this up more than a bunch of 15-year-olds on TikTok who are making videos saying, quote, we're done with the 90s. And this is a bunch of LeBron James fanboys who are trying to disparage Michael Jordan and trying to say that Jordan had no bag, that Jordan was getting cooked. You know, they put up a clip of Clyde Drexler giving Jordan the business for a couple of moments in the 1992 finals. Well, first of all, Clyde Drexler's in the Hall of Fame and made 10 All-Star games. Number one. Number two, in that finals, Jordan averaged 35 and a half points a game, shot over 50% from the field, and won finals MVP. But whatever. And that they're saying that Michael Jordan had no left hand. I mean, Michael Jordan's one of the great finishers with his left hand in NBA history. It's just LeBron fanboys will stoop to no levels to try to elevate their guy who's not on Michael Jordan's level. He's just not. I'm sorry. You can show all, you can clip all these random clips as much as you want. Anybody who's ever watched a full game of basketball and is above the age of 16 knows the truth. And this notion that the 90s basketball was trash is just nonsense. It's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. And I couldn't stand seeing it on my Twitter timeline. Like 90% of NBA Twitter is a bunch of idiots. And I just had to get that off my chest. All right. With that said, we're going to bring on a recurring guest who we taped a little bit earlier today to talk about the Giants free agency, what they may do in the draft at the 6th overall pick. And we'll get to him in just a matter of moments. We are in the week before the NCAA tournament, but NFL free agency popped off, as I said in the monologue. The Giants are very active, and I have none other than recurring guest who requested to come on when I saw him this past weekend, none other than Josh Shotskis. Josh, how we doing, bud?
Good. We need a little positive vibes around the Giants. I said that you have to have somebody that actually knows what they're talking about on your show when it comes to free agency. So consider it a favor.
So let me ask you this. All right. So obviously the Giants are very active. I know a lot of people are annoyed about the Saquon Barkley leaving to the Philadelphia Eagles. I kind of said my piece. I'm a little bit annoyed, a little bit not annoyed. I understand it. I wish that teams in general would allocate the salary cap differently because they're basically paying for the sins of the Daniel Jones contract this year. Where was your head at when you saw Barkley signed with the Eagles? Because I honestly thought he was going to come back on a two-year deal.
So a couple things. First of all, again, you and I have discussed the Daniel Jones contract. The Daniel Jones contract was structured in a way that allowed them to have a quarterback. I don't think they're paying for the sins of the Daniel Jones contract, because if he doesn't do something,
just in reference to Barkley being let go.
In reference to Barkley being let go, it's the best thing that ever happened to the Giants. Drafting a running back at number two is stupid. Investing big dollars into a running back was stupid. I am thrilled that Saquon Barkley is no longer a Giant. Do I think it's a bad look that he went to our top rival, the Eagles? Does it likely that he's going to have two big games against us this year? Yeah, as long as he's not hurt. The investment in a running back is foolish. There was a graphic comparing him and Singletary and their numbers this past year. And if I recall correctly, they're not that different, because running backs are easily replaceable. And if you needed more proof that re-signing Saquon Barkley was not essential, take a look at our record over the last 6 years with Saquon Barkley as the centerpiece. Building around a running back is foolish. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I understand all those things, but I also think, one, I think he's a little bit better than you're giving him credit for, because considering the offensive line win rate, I'll tell you why. Because the offensive line win rate in blocking was 31st in the league last year. And basically never gave him a chance, and he was still pretty good. I mean, he was the best player on the team that went to the playoffs 2 years ago. Like,
I don't agree with that either. By the end of that season and the second half of that season, go back and watch the games. It was not Saquon Barkley carrying the Giants. He actually struggled in the second half of that season because he got injured as usual. And Daniel Jones was the one who carried the team. I'm not sitting here and saying Daniel Jones is the answer and the Messiah. I'm saying Saquon Barkley, out of six seasons, has three seasons in which he went over 1,000 yards, which is not that big of a cutoff anymore like it was when we were kids, because there's more games and, very frankly, there's more offense. And he's only played a full season one time, his rookie season. There's a reason for that. It's the same thing that I said when we drafted him second. Running backs are not built to be the centerpiece of your team from a team building standpoint. He's a great player. Sure, I would love to keep him for the price that we paid for Devin Singletary. But if you ask me if I'd rather that ridiculous contract that the Eagles gave him or the contract that we gave Singletary, it's a no-brainer. You want Saquon Barkley over Devin Singletary? Of course. Saquon Barkley's a better player. But if you ask me which contract I want between the two players, I am much happier with the Giants' choice. And it shows in the other things that they've done since and how they're building the roster.
So let's talk about those other things, because I agree with you kind of to a point. You know, the one thing I'll say is when you go back to that draft, they weren't taking Josh Allen. We all know.
Hold on. So most of the beat writers say that if John Mara, if Gettleman would have said quarterback, John Mara wanted Josh Allen. Now, that doesn't mean they would have taken Josh Allen, because...
And they would have taken Sam Darnold, and he would have sucked.
Well, maybe, maybe not. Sam Darnold's still getting pretty nice contracts because people still believe in his talent, because he hasn't been with any good teams, and last year was the first year, and he was the backup for the Niners, and obviously he got enough positive reviews behind the scenes from Kyle Shanahan, and the Vikings just gave him a pretty decent deal for 1 year. And he was a pretty desired commodity, apparently. So... I'm not saying that. I'm saying, well, listen, being a great quarterback matters as much where you land as how good you are sometimes.
I guess my point was, is knowing that Gettleman wasn't going to trade back. And
which remains ridiculous to this day, but
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, of course. Sure. And then they did it and they didn't take Micah Parsons. We could talk about all the stupidity with Dave Gettleman in a second. But knowing that he wasn't going to trade back at that time, and knowing that I didn't like Sam Darnold, they weren't taking Josh Allen, I was okay with the Barkley pick because I thought he could have been wearing a gold jacket one day. But whatever, it is what it is. Things didn't necessarily unfold the way I thought they were going to unfold. But the Giants did some other things. They beefed up the offensive line, which was a major issue. As I mentioned, you know, the 31st win rate in the run game. You know, pass blocking hasn't been great either. They brought in John Runyon from the Raiders. They brought in the other guard who seems to have graded out well. I'm forgetting what his name is. If you just remind me really quick.
Illuminor from the Raiders. He's a swing guy.
Oh, so Illuminor's from the Raiders. Runyon's from the Packers. Excuse me. Right. And they traded for Brian Burns, the star defensive end from the Carolina Panthers. He's 26 years old, for a second, a fifth, and they gave him a $150 million contract. They also let Xavier McKinney walk. So, and yes, they brought in Drew Lock as a backup quarterback. Tyrod Taylor signed with the Jets. So overall, where are you at with the Giants right now in terms of a two-part question? How they did in the first 2 days of free agency so far, and what's that going to mean in terms of next year's wins and losses?
So from a team building perspective, I am thrilled with what they're doing. I think that we are finally building properly, focusing on higher profile, higher value positions like pass rusher and like offensive line. And also the manner in which we invest in the offensive line, recognizing that what we really just signed was a middling guard and a possibly good guard who also could be a swing tackle and insurance for Evan Neal, that we didn't spend crazy amounts of money for those guys. I think that was very, very shrewd. And then we invested in a pass rusher, which is a high value premium position. Thrilled about that. I would have liked to retain Xavier McKinney, but as we look at what they've done since, it's clear why they did it. They decided not to value safety because that is not a premium position in the same way they decided not to value running back. And they instead focused on premium positions, building up the offensive line, building up the trenches, and getting an elite pass rusher. And if there's one thing that we know from a defensive standpoint that usually plays well in the NFL, it is having an elite pass rush. That is something that usually takes you far. And so I'm fine with the swing that they took. There's a couple of great Giants podcasts out there that I like to watch. And they also do YouTube film, doing film on these guys. And I've watched them already. They're trustworthy guys. It seems like that Runyon is good pass blocker, not a great run blocker. Okay, serviceable. And they didn't spend a ton of money on it. It's really a two-year deal. The other guy, Illuminor, it's surprising to everyone, considering how well he played last year, that they were able to get him at the price that he did. You wonder if there's something else that most people don't know, because he probably should have gone for more off the way he played last year. So we don't know what we don't know, but we'll take the deal. And if he plays as well as he should and serves as insurance at right tackle for Evan Neal, or at the very least starts at guard, great. And so that's great. Brian Burns, you're hoping that going from a horrible Carolina Panthers team to a team that hopefully is going to use him with the new defensive coordinator, rush the passer and not drop back into coverage as much, takes that next step from being a great pass rusher to an elite pass rusher. And additionally, putting him on the other side of Kayvon, and you hope the two of them feed off of each other with Dexter in the middle. And you have the makings of what hopefully becomes an elite pass rush, an elite front four. And I like that plan. I think that's the proper way to build a team. And the Giants have succeeded that way. And most teams that end up making it far in the playoffs usually have those things intact, a great offensive line and a great front four on defense.
So I'm happy that they addressed offensive line in free agency, because I did not want them using their sixth overall pick on an offensive lineman, because this team has shown the inability to draft offensive linemen over the years, aside for Andrew Thomas. So that was good. Obviously, elite pass rushers are hard to find. Brian Burns is that. And, you know, giving up the picks that they got for Leonard Williams to flip for him, the contract is the contract. But I think that's a pretty good move. I guess, you know, I would have liked them to have kept McKinney. But let me ask you this. So, obviously, you know, Jimmy Johnson back in the day had a very famous, you know, draft chart, right, that everybody started to use. And then all of a sudden, in terms of, you know, valuing picks and valuing certain positions, but then all of a sudden it kind of like was overused. And I think you find diamonds in the rough, you know, kind of going against the grain. Do you think that there's any truth to that in terms of just positional, you know, players? Obviously, you talked about how there are certain positions that are glamour positions right now that, you know, seem to get the bulk of the salary cap, whether it's quarterback, defensive end, corner, receiver, and tackle. Do you think that there is any value in sort of going against the grain, unless you're going to get like the top three in that position?
You mean in the draft?
In the draft, free agency, you know, because the salary cap is like a very, you know, a very finite, you know, amount of resources, right? So it's just like, those are the positions that get the most money allocated, you know, or resources allocated towards, you know, that salary cap. Would you say that it's gone too far with those positions, and that you end up paying for less premium players because you feel like you need to have those positions be, you know, especially in free agency, that those positions are paid for?
No, I think that's why the Giants have sucked for years, because they have not adjusted to the NFL and focused on premium positions. I think that's where you should spend your money, because there are replaceable pieces. As good as Saquon Barkley is inherently as a player, he is replaceable. As good as Xavier McKinney is as a player, the safety market is flooded with players at this time, and the Giants are going to be able to find someone not as good as Xavier McKinney, but someone who will come close enough to Xavier McKinney that they are better off with the combination of Brian Burns and that replacement player over Xavier McKinney and a lesser, much lesser pass rusher.
Yeah, but I think, but, you know, there was... right. But my issue with that is that then you end up paying Daniel Jones $40 million.
So, but again, we had talked about this the last time I was on the show. $40 million for Daniel Jones. Again, you're just doing the absolute number. You have to take into account the percentage of salary cap and the value of the player relative to what you'd have to spend to get a replacement at that position at the same value. $40 million sounds like a lot. For a quarterback in the NFL, it is not. Furthermore, the way he structured that deal is two-year
deal.
Oh,
the way they structured the deal is great because they can get out of it after this
year. Correct.
I'm not arguing that, but I do think that, like, at a certain point, unless you're Mahomes, Josh Allen, or Joe Burrow, like, the quarterback contracts have gone so over the edge that, like, I just wouldn't pay guys. Like, I wouldn't.
But then you wouldn't have a quarterback. Okay, you're so thinking you about this.
But then you draft on every single year and you try and hit it.
You're thinking about it just as Baker Mayfield just got less than Daniel Jones, about $35 million. Baker Mayfield, intrinsically, you don't think should be $35 million. Last year, he got, I don't remember what it was, I think it was less than $10 million to come to the Buccaneers because his value was so low. A starting quarterback, a middling starting quarterback, Baker Mayfield just showed you the value. Baker Mayfield value came in at 35. That's what the market is. You can say that the Giants perhaps last year overspent by about $5 million because they didn't want to let him go to the market. Buccaneers let Baker Mayfield go to the market. Maybe Jones gets more, maybe Jones doesn't. He was coming off a great season. That's market value. This is strictly a business. And I think a good example is something that I recently heard about Brock Bowers. I think Daniel Jeremiah said it. Brock Bowers is an elite tight end talent. Okay, better than what Kyle Pitts was. He's everything you would want out of a tight end. But if he gets drafted in the top 10, his contract is going to be close to what an elite tight end is already paid now if they got franchised. The difference is not significant. So from a strictly dollars and cents standpoint, which again is how these guys do business if they're good at their jobs, they don't look at it like we do as fans. They look at it, what's the value relative to the contract? Drafting a tight end in the top 10 versus drafting a wide receiver where the franchise, where's like a Justin Jefferson is getting over $30 million or whatever it is, give or take $30 million. And what the value of getting a wide receiver at the rookie scale versus a Justin Jefferson at $30 million, whereas you take Brock Bowers and what he's getting there, and it's not that far off from what an elite tight end makes. It doesn't right. make sense as much to draft because it's strictly dollars and cents. So you're sitting there and looking at the player and saying, just drafting a quarterback. These guys don't have job security that they can go and do that. They need somebody that can operate an offense and go and win games. It may not be winning a Super Bowl, but they paid Daniel Jones commensurate to the market. They did it in a way that doesn't lock him into him for many years to come if he would struggle, which is exactly what happened last year. And they'll be out of it next year if he doesn't change his tune this year and go back to the guy he was 2 years ago. They'll be able to get out of it short of an injury. The only argument you could make that Joe Shane should have done better is protect himself against injury for 2025. And what will happen is if the Giants are down in the dumps midseason, they will bench Daniel Jones because he has an injury guarantee for 2025 in his contract.
Right.
And they will do the same thing that the Broncos did to Russell Wilson.
Yes.
Right. So that's the only thing that you could argue that Joe Shane should have tried to get out of in the contract. Otherwise, he did exactly what you would want him to do in the contract. And $40 million is not crazy to pay for a middle of the road quarterback.
Yeah. But that's the point I'm trying to make. Right now, I think it's gone so crazy that it's on all the owners and the general managers to reset the market.
It will never happen.
Expectations.
It will never happen until at the non-premium positions, replaceable parts don't become close to the same for the elite player you're talking about. If you own a car and it's a fancy schmancy car and it has a part that can only be found in the middle of Australia, that part here in America is going to be crazy valuable because finding a replacement is going to be difficult. Versus if you have a part in that car that, yeah, you want the best part, but you could easily find another one in another part of the city, that part, it doesn't matter if that second part is not as good as the first one, that part will just not be as valuable. So the owners and general managers will never do what you're asking them because it's a business. It's replaceable or it's not replaceable. Saquon Barkley.
I just think that, you know, a lot more quarterbacks are replaceable than not. But that's a good segue to this because the Giants have the sixth pick in the draft, right? Talk about replaceable. What do you want them to do with the sixth pick? They're obviously out of range right now. If you go according to all the mock drafts for the top three quarterbacks in the draft. Now there's been talk about J.J. McCarthy being a riser in the draft, that he's been linked to them at six. They did something similar with Daniel Jones in terms of where they drafted him based on projections. They've also been linked to a bunch of different wide receivers. They've been linked to the tackle out of Notre Dame. Where do you see them going with the sixth pick? What would you like them to do with the sixth pick?
So first of all, I think they've probably declared themselves as not going for the offensive lineman with the amount that they just spent in you know, financial capital.
I should hope so. Yes, I should hope so.
Right. So listen, the J.J. McCarthy thing, as someone who, you know, loves listening to draft talk and listens to a lot of draft podcasts, I can tell you that before the last couple months, before this college football year even started, going back to like when he was just starting out, everybody was saying the NFL loves him. Okay. How much they love him, I don't know. This might all be just, you know, draft talk right now and people trying to still, you know, raise the value of someone who they don't really want. But this goes back since J.J. McCarthy came to college, that the NFL loves him. So if we assume for a moment that there really is a top four and not a top three like the media wants you to think, and we don't know the answer to that because the media just studies what's on tape, whereas the NFL apparently loves J.J. McCarthy for what there is behind the scenes. Apparently he's the smartest of the quarterbacks. He's able to, you know, sit in a room with a coach and they just know that he knows the offense and he's going to be able to do what they need him to do. I think that's the reason that he's viewed that way by the NFL versus the staff, you know, versus the media. But if we assume that there's actually a top four, right, the Giants are still six. As fans, we have to hope that we have the correct general manager who's going to pick the correct quarterback. So we don't know for sure. So my hope is that Joe Shane actually knows what he's doing in picking a quarterback. And if the one that he wants is there, he will find a way to go up and get him, even if it's at number four, and that he will have the good, you know, wisdom to not trade up just for the fourth out of these four quarterbacks, just because he wants to get a quarterback. And instead will say, this is not the year that I'm going to go ahead and draft a rookie quarterback because the guy I want, or the guys of these four that I would want, are just not available. And then he will then pivot towards taking the elite wide receiver. He seems like a smart guy to me. He seems like a guy that understands team building. Again, the reason I'm very happy with how they've gone about it, whether you like the players or not, they are doing things properly from a team building standpoint. And so I want them to hopefully get the quarterback that Joe Shane and Brian Daboll think is the quarterback that'll be the Giants quarterback for the next 10, 15 years. And if they don't think that guy's available, that they pivot to wide receiver. That's what I want. That's what I think.
So you'd be comfortable with them taking McCarthy at six?
If Joe Shane and Brian Daboll think that J.J. McCarthy is going to be good enough to be the Giants quarterback for the next 10 years, I have absolutely no problem with it. Because as a fan, I never trusted Dave Gettleman. Not once. As soon as he was hired, I thought it was an awful hire. I always said, I do not trust this guy at all. Every move that he made, I questioned because I did not think that the guy understood at all how to run a team. And he showed it every time he talked. Joe Shane, I believe, knows how to run a team. Brian Daboll, I believe, knows how to pick out a quarterback. And so If they pick J.J. McCarthy, as a fan, I'm rolling with it and saying I'm going to trust them. And we won't know if they're right or wrong until the guy goes out and shows it.
Right.
But I think the NFL has shown plenty of times already they do not know how to evaluate quarterbacks. They do a poor job of it overall, which is why there's so many busts. And we have to believe as fans that the guys that we have in place now will do it properly. And their track record to a degree, at least Dable's as a quarterback guru, shows that they should, know how to do it. And Joe Shane, I think, is showing you he does know how to build a team. And if they fail, they're going to lose their jobs. And we as fans will move on to the next decision makers. So I have no idea if they'll get it right, because I don't sit in a room with J.J. McCarthy. And, you know, all I do is watch him on television. But on television, he doesn't look like a first-round quarterback. I don't disagree at all with the media that says that. But on television, he was running an offense that was meant to run the ball two-thirds of the time. And
yeah, I mean, he wasn't really given the keys to the operation. So now it's a matter of, is he capable of driving the car?
Right. I mean, but look at C.J. Stroud. Everything that people said C.J. Stroud couldn't do, he ended up doing this year. He was able to do, and he just never showed it in college because it's not the way he ran the offense.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm not a scout, and I'm not I watched it on television, and I watched the breakdowns by guys who are really good at breaking down film. And in the end, as a fan, we just have to trust the decision makers if we believe in them. I never believed in Dave Gettleman. I can tell you I believe in Joe Shane. I think he's doing things right, and we have to hope he gets the right at quarterback, whether it's this year or in a future year.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I obviously would love for them to, if, again, I don't necessarily know what they're thinking, but if there's a way to get into the top three.
There's been a lot of rumors.
I mean, the only team that may be looking to move down is New England. And I'm not really sure how real that is, but I mean, who the hell knows? Like, my whole thing is, like, if you miss on a quarterback in the top 10, like, that sets your team back at least 3 years. At least. So,
right, so
if you're not sold, go for the wide receiver who's going to be more of a sure thing and figure out the quarterback afterwards. Because, like, we've seen guys – I just think, you know
– No, but Aaron, you just said it right.
Quarterback is replaceable.
I don't think that at all. I mean,
just the top five of the league. I don't think there's much of a difference.
I don't agree with that. I think that there is definitely tiers of quarterbacks. I think that as Giants fans, we hope that Daniel Jones was going to jump into that next tier. He's not in the tier of like a Mahomes or a Burrow, but we hope that he would jump into that next tier. You know, that was a level below. He showed something the year before and what he was able to do in his decision making and how he played. And we hope that he was going to jump from like the middling tier to, you know, the really good tier. And he didn't do it. Instead, he took a step back. He got completely hammered with the poor offensive line. And then his decision making went down the tank. And quite honestly, no matter whether they pick a quarterback or not this year in the draft, Daniel Jones is still probably the starter. And he's going to get his chance to show that he deserves to continue to be a starter, whether it's with the Giants or with somebody else in 2025, based on how he plays. But I definitely think there's still tiers of quarterbacks, and I don't think they're all just replaceable. I definitely don't think that's true. And I think that the difference between winning the games in the fourth quarter and not winning the games in the fourth quarter most often comes down to your quarterback and the decision-making.
So where are they at right now with the cap? Because I think you and I are in agreement that they're not going to be very good next year, that this is a little bit of a transition year.
So I think that, why don't we think about them? Listen, the fan in me will never say what you just said, and I don't agree with that. The reason I don't agree with that is look what just happened with the Houston Texans. Look what happened with the Giants 2 years before. The difference between winning and losing in the NFL is literally razor thin, okay? And just a few plays here or there is the difference between being a playoff team and being 5-12. And the breaks went the Giants' way. The decisions went the Giants' way 2 years ago. Last year, they didn't. But the way they played in the second half showed you what they were capable of, even though they had replacement-level players in a lot of spots all over the place. I mean, the Giants almost beat the Bills, and then the Bills, you know, could have easily gone to the AFC Championship game. I don't look at the NFL that way. I look at the NFL as being you build the best team that you can, you catch some breaks, and all of a sudden you have a great year. So I think of it as they are, you know, building, but there's no reason they have to suck this year. I don't conclude with that. I think the situation is as follows. He is building the team the way he wants, inside out, through the trenches. He's putting together an offensive line. He's putting together a pass rush. Okay. This is a year that hopefully more of the breaks go our way than not. And it's more like 2 years ago than last year. It's going to be a year for Daniel Jones, perhaps not for the Giants if they draft a quarterback, but possibly for the Giants if the draft doesn't go their way. He's looking to play to show he's a continued starter in the NFL. If he plays well and the Giants haven't drafted a quarterback, he's probably bought himself a third year as the Giants quarterback. And if he's done that well enough, then he's going to look like a bargain in that third year. If he doesn't play well, they cut him. They take the whatever $20 million dead hit, which is not a lot relative to the cap anymore, which is how Shane structured it purposely. And they're restarting at quarterback, which we sort of knew. I think Mara's going to let these guys run with it, at the very least, Shane. I don't think he wants to change his GM. I don't – whether Dable continues or not, that depends on, I think, a lot how the season goes. But I don't think Joe Shane's going anywhere.
Oh, I agree with that. And, again, I say this, you know, before the draft. Like, the draft hasn't happened yet. We don't know what's going on. I mean, right now, as it stands – you mentioned the Texans. I do think Washington is more of a, or I should say right now, a better bet to pull a Houston Texans than the Giants, but whatever. I just, you know, if this is in fact a transition year, you know, with the cap flexibility going forward, like, are they still flexible to do other things going forward, or are they kind of just like lock themselves in a little bit, considering the long-term money to Burns, the fact that they've, you know, spent a little bit on the offensive line? I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but like, are they still gonna have some flexibility going forward?
Yeah, so if you look at their salary cap of what's listed, it's $38 million. And then there is what they call an effective cap number, which I think takes into account that they have to sign draft picks. So it takes into account what they would need to spend on draft picks. It also takes into account how things would shift once the offseason shifts to the real season. So I think that that was listed as at about $30 million. But for the time being, let's go with the 38. They could, with shifting money on Dexter Lawrence's and Andrew Thomas's contract, and I think without even Okereke's, get up to $63 million. And the way that Brian Burns's contract is even structured is that when the season starts, they could even shift money around on Brian Burns. So what Shane is doing is he's not moving money till he has to. Okay, he's not sacrificing the future and killing our cap like Gettleman did. But if he has to do a little bit when the season approaches, or if the Giants, let's say, get surprising midseason and he has to do it, he's built in mechanisms that he could. For the rest of free agency till the draft, I would guess that if we take that $63 million as sort of the max, let's just pick that number, they've probably spent at this point about 40 and 45 on the cap on what they've done so far. Let's do 45. So let's say that they have about $18 million in cap space, with, of course, room to do more if they wanted by shifting Burns and Okereke. They're probably bargain shopping at this point. I think they're probably going to be looking for a starting corner. You know, they tried that with Darius Williams, but he's got a bigger contract from the Rams. I think they'll be bargain shopping at safety. Maybe somebody like Jordan Poyer, who the Bills cut. And I think they'll be just getting some depth at the defensive line and linebacker, again, with bargain basement guys over the next few weeks till the draft comes. That's where I think Shane's going. I think he got the heavy lifting done in day one. And I think we wait and see with the draft now if he will or won't make a move to get his quarterback if that opportunity presents itself.
I would like them to come away with a quarterback within the first 2 to 3 rounds. I do think from everything that I've read, is that, you know, even past the first three at McCarthy in his own tier, that there are other guys that could be exciting. I do believe that they need to take a quarterback in the first three rounds. Neither of us believe that they're going to be in the market for any, you know, higher priced skill position players, right? Like we're not in the T. Higgins market. We're not doing anything like that. Correct?
No, I don't think that's anything on the table at all. I think
right.
They actually have a nice, you know, young group of wide receivers from which to build. And I think even if when we spoke last time, you asked me about what the draft is going to be, and I told you it's going to be offensive linemen and wide receivers. And that is still true. I think even if they go quarterback in the first round, as long as they maintain their second round pick, they should be able to get a very solid wide receiver in the second round. I think the first 2 days of the draft, we're talking about, 15 to 20 wide receivers going off the board out of the whatever 100 picks. I think literally 20, close yeah, to 20%
there's of the Duke safe from Washington, who's really good. Neighbors is really good. I mean, I don't think they're going to be in the Marvin Harrison Jr. range from what I've seen. They've got this guy from Florida State. Like, there's a lot of Duke.
That's my point, is that if, let's say, they make some bold move and they trade up and get a quarterback in the first round, or somehow their quarterback falls to them at six, they still can get, if they want to go that route, a wide receiver if that's something they want. But I mean, they have a pretty decent core if you look at it. I mean, Slayton, Wandale really was breaking out there at the end of the season. Jalen Hyatt is going to have another season under his belt.
Yeah, but none of those guys are really difference makers.
Listen, it's how you design your offense. Wandale was out of control the last four games of the season. I mean, he was amazing. Hey, go look. I think it was the last three or the last four games. But I mean, listen, if they don't go quarterback, they're going to be drafting a wide receiver who has the potential for being a number one, whether it's Harrison, Neighbors, or Odunze. Daniel Jeremiah has said a few times, by the way, that there are certain teams that have Odunze ranked ahead of Marvin Harrison, by the way. So I'm not saying that Giants are getting Marvin Harrison. I'm simply saying that I heard Daniel Jeremiah himself say that it wouldn't shock him if Roma Dunze went ahead of Marvin Harrison. And I heard somebody else, and I don't remember who was, that some teams have Malik Neighbors because of explosiveness ranked ahead of Marvin Harrison. Now, all this is just draft talk, and Marvin Harrison probably goes further. I'm just saying, don't – we should never assume with the NFL draft, right? I mean
– It's going to be interesting. I mean, the Giants have won two Super Bowls in my lifetime, so they can't drive me as crazy as the New York Knicks do, as the Rangers do, because, again, 1994 was a while ago. But
if you're a Rangers fan, because, by the way, you should have me on for a Ranger podcast. I mean, I absolutely love that.
Listen, it just came out now that our guy Rempe got four games for his latest high elbow hit.
Yeah, I don't think he did it purposely. Just, I don't know if you want to get into hockey. I think, honestly, that was an accident.
It's going to have to be its own segment because we're running a little long. But my wish for Rempe right now is just relax with the fighting. We've seen what happened with guys who are, you know, instigators and considered tough guys. It hasn't fared well. You know, Bugard is a cautionary tale. Like, just relax with the fighting and play hockey.
We should have a whole segment on this, by the way, because I have opinions on this.
We will. We'll do it, but we'll have to run it back in the next couple of weeks. Josh, this was great. I always appreciate your takes on football. I think they're very well thought out, even if we disagree on the quarterback stuff. But it's always good to talk Giants. Kind of exciting times. I mean, you know, NFL free agency is kind of been all the rage the last couple of days. I think it's gotten bigger in terms of just, like, you know, it's kind of taken on an NBA like free agency day in terms of media coverage and Twitter coverage, like July 1st would be. But it, you know, good to catch up on the Giants. We'll have to do it again soon. And yes, we'll talk a little bit of Rangers in the next couple of weeks.
You got it, man. Thanks for having me on. Talk to you later.
I'll speak to you soon. Thanks again to recurring guest Josh Otzkus, Dr. Josh Otzkus, I should say, for coming on to talk a little bit about the Giants free agency and what they're going to do in the draft. Great conversation with him. where we're going to have him on to talk a little bit of Rangers down the stretch. The Rangers come. They had a great win tonight. That's episode 246. For the love of the game, take us out, Ludacris and crew.
Put your hand up in the air and you can play with the stars. It's not the hand that you dealt, but how you playing your cards, boy. Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.